Gentlemen, it's 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and as usual, that means it's time for the other podcast. I'm your host, Robert Stacy McCain.
And I'm not. Hi, folks. It's the other guy on the other podcast, John Hogue here, and live and direct, I believe, from exotic Valdosta, Georgia.
I'm right here.
Hi, Diana.
Oh, God, you can really hear me.
Loud and clear. You're wonderfully clear tonight.
You're 10-10.
Yeah.
Oh, great, great. You know, I bounced my connection like 5 times to be sure I'd get a good one.
You're excellent tonight. By the way, Stacy blogs at theothermccain.com and other fine places around the interwebs.
And you can find my good friend John Hogue's work at his blog, Hogwash.com.
And believe it or not, Diana blogs from time to time, just not at the frequency we do. Diana, tell people how to see your work.
If you are interested in anything to do with nonprofit world, come to dealyadvancement.com and go to blog, and you will find me. And sometimes you may find it like, God, woman, what are you talking about? But at other times, I'm pretty sure you'll find it fun.
Well, you've had a couple of really good posts in the last month or two about a couple of not-for-profits.
Oh, have I ever.
Yes, I've enjoyed it very much.
It's really funny because 90% of the time, I think nonprofits are of no interest unless you're trying to make a gift or figure out what they're doing. It's very seldom that there's actually something relevant to the public discourse, like, oh, Rebecca Jones.
Well, you know, a not-for-profit is an excellent way to run a grift.
Boy, howdy.
Particularly if you can keep the grift down in the under $500,000 a year range on average, because that's not a big fish for the IRS.
Not for the IRS. The only time they pay attention, I think, is when you start like that one cancer charity getting up into the $1 million to $1.5 million range. And of course, if you're not politically connected, you're dead.
Yeah, well, and occasionally the IRS will get sicked on a not-for-profit by some other agency because, well, let's just put it to you like this. Al Capone went to jail for tax evasion.
Yep.
So yep. Anyway, but tell me, Diana, how are you spending your 16 cents?
What 16 cents? I mean, it's like sort of 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt?
No. The White House had a tweet out with a link to a thing on YouTube, and the tweet reads: "Planning a cookout this year? Yeah. Ketchup on the news." Oy. According to the Farm Bureau, the cost of a 4th of July barbecue is down from last year. In fact, you must heard. Hot dog. The Biden economic plan is working, and that's something we can all relish. And then the headline on the YouTube thing says the cost of a 4th of July cookout in 2021 is down 16 cents from last year.
Supposedly. Did you look at the photo they showed? Their supposed spread. I don't know who eats like that on the 4th of July. I mean, I'll grant you, last year we did kind of go overboard because we were bored and lonely and cooked like crazy. But seriously, you want, you know, you got your, where's your steak? Where's your ribs?
Or for hot dogs or burgers. I mean, that's typically what I wind up doing on the grill on the 4th of July.
Or chicken. Oh, my. It,
well, chicken was a specialty for another holiday around our house. But, you know, you can always get away with burgers and hot dogs on the 4th of July. Stacy, how have you spent your 16 cents?
Well, tell me, yes.
Not on fireworks.
Yes.
I'm so old, I remember when 16 cents would buy a couple of 20 shot packs of lady fingers.
Okay, yeah. Have you, yes. So anyways, but the 16 cents is not going to buy you much. And the idea that the Biden economic plan is working. Okay, what is A, what is the plan, and B, how is it working?
Well,
okay.
Well, that would depend on its goals as to how it's working.
Well, but the idea, the idea that just spending, just flinging $4 trillion in the general direction of a problem is to call that a plan. You know, it's just like,
no.
Well, we're going to turn on the money machine.
Yeah. And no,
and
actually,
spend money we don't have.
No, what it is that we're going to run the grift to pay off the people who got us here. Look, I did the math, and if the average family drives a car that gets 22 miles per gallon, which is the current fleet average, by the way, and they only live a couple of miles from a grocery store, then the 16 cents that they've saved will just kind of almost exactly pay for the increase in the price of the gasoline they're going to use driving back and forth to the store.
Ouch.
Okay. Ouch. And so in the vein of the puns in the tweet, I suppose we should expect more of the same in the economic pipeline.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Is it 2025 yet?
No, sadly.
Well, you know. Okay,
maybe
we'll
do things differently then.
Yeah, well, you know.
You know, by the way, when we're, you know, to speak of the year 2021, you know, when we were kids, that was a science fiction year. You know what I'm saying?
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah. The, you know, space 1999 or whatever.
Well, we're already a year past Back to the Future.
Right.
And I think, is it next year or Soylent Green?
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But I'm not counting that one out at this point.
Well, particularly for New York.
Truth.
Anyways, well.
Yeah, anyway. So, but, you know, we're not the only people who talk about this sort of stuff. You were writing about the Timcast and journalistic midwits.
Yeah, by the way, you know, speaking about statistics, you know, one of the first things you learn when you come to Washington, you know, and start covering problems, is you realize that either side of any argument can always marshal statistics to justify their position. Okay, so you learn simply to ignore anyone who argues using statistics.
Either that, or you actually pass the course in statistics and you see the holes and the bullshit they're slinging.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, but you and don't get me started on polling, okay?
Boy.
Because I could talk about you know, the misinterpretation of poll data. I mean, you know, is that people don't understand anything. Anyways, a guy named Devlin Barrett, who covers the Justice Department for the Washington Post.
Democracy dies in derpness.
Sent out a tweet talking about the 40% difference between, quote, crime is a problem somewhere else versus a problem where they actually live. Okay, in other words, they polled people who said, is crime a problem in the United States or is crime a problem in the area you live. Okay, they ask two different questions, right?
Right.
Okay, and you find that people believing that crime is a serious problem in the United States, right? Okay, that this is a higher number than the number of people who say it's a problem where they live.
Well, not that many people live in Baltimore or St. Louis or San Francisco or LA or New York or Philadelphia compared to the rest of the country.
Right, right, right. And so this gap, and he believes that this poll shows a difference between perception and reality. And I'm looking at this thing, I said, no, you fucking imbecile. Mm-hmm. Excuse my French.
But I completely empathize. Go on.
Okay, you fucking imbecile. The important number here, if you look at it, is that people who say crime is a serious problem where they live went from 10% a year ago to 17% now. Which is a 70% increase.
But the other
number. You have people, a 70% increase in people saying that crime is a serious problem where they live, that is fucking significant, you dumbass.
Well, not only that, not only that, but the other important number is that the number of is crime a problem overall is essentially static. So the problem is not that people think that crime is up in the country. The problem is people think crime is up where they live. Gee, I wonder why gun sales almost doubled in the past year. Okay. You know, Smith & Wesson had their first $1 billion sales year.
Yeah. Well, Tim Pool. Now, folks, if you don't know Tim Pool, he goes by Timcast on Twitter, and you can find Tim Pool's podcast on YouTube. He does it like two or three times a day, and he's got more than 1 million subscribers on YouTube, which is a larger audience than many CNN programs.
Well, I think it's a larger audience now than Rachel Maddow.
Yeah, it is a large audience. And Tim Pool started out his career as a journalist by doing on-the-scene video reporting. He started out with the Occupy movement, you remember, of 2011. He covered the Occupy protests and then went, he's been to Ukraine, and I'm trying to think of the other countries he's been to, but he has traveled around the world, really, covering protests, and then became a commentator. Anyways, but he, if you will click on that video, it's on my blog. It's called Timcast versus the Journalistic Midwits. You'll see him talking about the problem what's wrong with journalism. Why can't these people see what's wrong with their thing? You know, and he just takes this one tweet and goes off and begins talking about philosophy.
Stacy, you're a drama major, aren't you?
I did major in drama in college.
Yeah, did you remember the play called The Front Page?
I saw the movie The Front
The Front Page was the play almost dead nuts right. on. Did those two guys really seem like intellectuals to you?
No.
Do you think
no.
they're graduates of Columbia?
No.
Well, how about the Missouri School of Journalism?
Back in the day, journalism was
a craft.
A craft. It was
wretches.
Yes, the ink-stained wretches of the trade, and it was not something that people didn't think of themselves as, you know, you didn't go into journalism to quote unquote. And Rush Limbaugh always used to say that what's wrong with journalism, the people went into it to quote unquote make a difference, right? They thought they were making a difference by being journalism.
I got into it because I got paid 50 cents an hour more than minimum wage.
Right, 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 yeah. Yeah, you know, it was a job and not a career back in the day. But anyways, one of the problems that he talks about is he calls these people midwits, that they lack of any.
They have no bottom. They have
yes.
no intellectual foundation. They have no moral foundation. They don't even have a social foundation.
You know, we're getting an occasional bit of distortion on you, Diana.
I'm sorry, do you need me to?
Why don't you pop back out and pop back in to see if it's your line.
A better signal.
Yeah.
Okay. Hang on.
All right. We'll see you in just a second. Okay. Anyway,
but anyways, he talks about the and I went on to talk about the fact that what is going on here, you know, and I refer the fact that in 2001, I was assigned to do a feature article about Peter Jennings of ABC News. You remember him, the anchor, and it happened to be on the same day as the first press conference held by President George W. Bush. And I remember it because there was snow on the street, and I actually got to watch Jennings anchor that press conference. He was the anchor, and I have. You know, I'd always look down my nose, I think as most print journalists do, at the TV people, right? TV yeah. news seems, you know, a bunch of blow-dried pretty boys, you know, as we think of them. But I watched him do that, and it is doing what he did was actually much more difficult than he made it seem. It's like watching Eddie Van Halen play guitar, right? Okay, he makes it look like you could do that. Go ahead. Is Diana back with us?
Not just
yet. Have we got the signal?
Nope. No, she's not back with us yet. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. Well, anyways, but Jennings said to me, we went out. I had run out of cigarettes right before the interview, and I said, look, I need to run out for just a minute and go get a pack before I have to watch you do this broadcast. And he was getting into his makeup. He said, oh, I've got some. And he had told his wife he'd quit smoking, but he kept a pack of Camel Lights in his desk drawer. So he and I went outside and smoked a Camel Light together. And he said to me this. He said, don't you think journalism is inherently a liberal business? You know, comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable and all that. And I knew what he was saying. And I agree that he had a point that it is a certain type of work that attracts a certain type of person. And I guess I was a Democrat when I got into this business and remained a Democrat till my mid-30s. And it was only when I began to question, you know, what I had been raised to believe in as a Democrat, mainly the superiority of the Democratic Party. I was a partisan more than I was an ideologue. But I began to question my belief system as I was in my reaching my mid-30s. And that's when I started to notice the bias in my own industry, right? The one-sided nature of the thing. And it's this lack of balance that is the big problem in journalism today. And you see this with, for instance, these woke staff that have devoured the New York Times, you know, where the publisher and the editor are all living in fear of their 20-something woke staffers.
Well, yeah, we'll see what happens. But, I mean, it's not just journalism. It's various kinds of government. It's other kinds of corporations besides that. I mean, Diana and I are both escapees from California, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome back, Diana. Your signal's good now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you're nice. Nice, lovely voice.
All right, thanks. I was a little worried.
No, it just it's every once in a while in the digital world of things, things get out of sync, and something happened here.
We've got some thunderstorms rolling in. That may have something to do with it.
I think it was probably the NSA interfering with our signal.
Well, no, I'm sure that they would deny it.
Stop the signal.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm absolutely sure that they would deny it. They weren't listening to Tucker Carlson at all, you know.
No.
No, they had an official denial of that.
He's
of course,
not an intelligence target. That doesn't mean they're not listening.
Well, there's several things they didn't say. They didn't say that one of the other four nations that are part of the Five Eyes, you know, when GCHQ in Britain could be listening, CSE in Canada could be listening, GSGB in New Zealand could be listening, SB in Australia could be listening. And just because they happened to overhear something and happened to share it, you know, why that happens.
Yeah. By the way, most people don't realize that there is an intelligence sharing agreement between these major English speaking powers.
Five of the six major Anglophone powers have this agreement, and it's called the Five Eyes.
Yeah.
And that
had something to do with how the Russiagate thing went down.
Well,
gosh, yes.
Partially, although it looks like there were some other people involved as well. But it's going to be interesting if they ever figure out a way to get the sixth Anglophone nation, the Indians, involved. It's going to be
really scary. This NSA denial, this statement, okay, that they issued. Let me read it to you. On June 28, 2021, Tucker Carlson alleged that the National Security Agency has been, quote, monitoring our electronic communications and is planning to leak them in an attempt to take this show off the air, close quote. This allegation is untrue. Tucker Carlson has never been an intelligence target of the agency, and the NSA has never had any plans to try to take his program off the air. It goes on to say, NSA has a foreign intelligence mission. We target foreign powers to generate insight on foreign activities that could harm the United States. With limited exceptions, e.g. an emergency, NSA may not target a U.S. citizen without a court order that explicitly authorizes the targeting. Now, that statement, as you it's a very...
That's a non-denying deniable.
Denial. Now, it may be, you see, that they collected this information because they were targeting some foreign person with whom Tucker was communicating.
Right.
Right. And so that's how they got the information.
Or, as I said, if they weren't listening, the Brits were, or the Canadians.
Right.
Or the New Zealanders, or the Aussies.
Yeah, but Tucker specifically said that the information came through the NSA.
Well, that's the conduit back from those people.
Right, and so we don't know who he was communicating with. That he said that Tucker Carlson said specifically the person he talked to read back to him the contents of an email or a text message he had sent.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, but I mean,
one
see what
each, evidently. Just
but it would be perfectly legitimate for the communication security establishment in Ottawa to have been listening to conversations by Americans that related to an investigation by the Mounties. And then they have heard something.
Yeah.
You share information with your trusted friends. But here's the important lesson to be gained from this. I quoted Sir Humphrey Appleby in this.
A fictional character from the British television series, Yes, Minister.
Prime Minister. But never believe it. Actually, he's quoting Otto von Bismarck. Never believe anything until it has been officially denied.
Truth.
But Anyway, that's the story of the efficient denial. Meanwhile, you know, I keep telling people that have imposed these new rules on us that they're not going to like the rules if they get imposed on them. And sure enough, Right Wing Watch got themselves permanently banned from YouTube, and the ban lasted several hours.
Yes.
Mine is still in effect, by the way. I have been permanently banned from YouTube.
I'm sorry. You are the most inoffensive person I know. You make me look like a screaming radical, air on fire. Stacy, we love you, but you are a radical with your hair on fire.
Oh. Well.
Let me put
you.
It to you like this: Stacy is dangerous.
That is a polite way of saying it. Well, anyways, well, now that the NSA is listening in, so Right Wing Watch. They're going to expose the bigoted views and dangerous conspiracy theories spread by right-wing activists. Are there no left-wing activists? By the way, whenever you see this, this is one of the things, and it was Brent Bozell who pointed this out, I believe, is that the ideological labeling of the two sides, right? It is so unbalanced in the media that they often talk about the right wing, but that the phrase that left wing is almost never used.
Well, how many people are to the left of most of the media?
Right, that's the point. The idea that anyone who doesn't vote for Democrats has bigoted views and believes in dangerous conspiracy theories, you see? And this idea that not voting Democrat is all there, when they use right wing, that's all they mean, right? Yep. Is that you don't vote for Democrats, and so therefore you're a bad person.
No, you're a white supremacist.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
Yes. And speaking of which, I did a long post called, and it's all text. It's why it seems a little longer. Called White Supremacy Jiu-Jitsu. Mm-hmm. And I had earlier. I have to go back and I have to check here. What it started is I did a post called Thank You, Officer Curtis Brown. Mm-hmm. And it was about how a police officer in Portland, Oregon, shot a methamphetamine addict named, anyways, we're going to get to that. I've got a later post about methamphetamine, but hang on a second. Hang on. I have to now, all of this is running together in my mind. No, I'm not on drugs. Okay. So meanwhile, okay. So a guy named Michael Ray Townsend, who is white, right, got shot by a black cop named Officer Curtis Brown in, of all places, Portland, Oregon, you know, which is sort of ground zero of Antifa. Well, as soon as that, you know, an officer shot an unarmed man. Well, he was armed. He was armed with a screwdriver and was charging at someone. But anyways, as soon as this news went out, and without knowing anything about who had been shot or why or who shot him, the Antifa usual suspect showed up to have a protest. And then when they learned that it was a black cop and a white suspect, there was it wasn't even a news story anymore.
And I have to explain that it's always heartwarming news when cops shoot a white criminal.
Okay. And this is one of the things about white supremacy, see, is that if you think that white people, right, are, you know, a high caliber of, you know, a high quality people, well, what is this trash over here, this deadbeat criminal meth head? We don't care about him. Let him die, right? That's the proper attitude.
Well, you mean there is such a thing as white trash?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Anyways, in my post about Officer Curtis Brown, someone accused me of being, of all things, a self-hating white. Because I was saying, well, who cares about this criminal?
Stacy, you have a very cheerful self-appreciation that almost rivals mine.
And better than that, they didn't. The author of the of that accusation has absolutely no understanding of irony.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the thing is that, folks, you know, if you don't know a little bit about my background, first of all, tell you, don't believe anything you read on the internet, okay?
He's quoting Abraham Lincoln there, folks.
Yeah, in 2007, the first time I met Herman Cain, you know, I said, hey, don't Google me. And he said, oh, I already did. And he smiled. And I said, hey, you got to understand. And he said, don't worry about it. You know, so anyways, that's a story I love to tell. But anyway, don't Google me. Oh, I already did. Oops. Okay. Well, anyway, so my reputation as an extremist is something, you know, I've got the scars, you know, as Coriolanus, right? If you're familiar with Shakespeare, you know, Coriolanus is required by the tribunes to show his scars to the public. And that's, you know, trust me, I'm bearing the scars.
Actually, I ran into Coriolanus in Latin class before I got to him in Shakespeare, but that's okay.
Okay. See Vanderbilt. He went to Vanderbilt, folks.
That was in high school. Latin was in high school.
Anyways, I'm going to let this go. But anyways, but the point is that the accusation of white supremacy is an accusation of ignorance. It is the person, and I have never been in a situation where the person pointing the finger and saying racist, right, was not also white. Okay, we have a bunch of white people running around pointing the finger at other white people and screaming racist. And the idea is to accuse you of ignorance. You see, you're not as bright and as enlightened as the person who is accusing you. So what they're really doing is they're displaying their own superiority to you. Mm-hmm. And I recommend, and I've been recommending for many years, that people read what I consider the best single volume analysis of the psychology of liberalism, Thomas Sowell's The Vision of the Anointed, Self-Congratulation as a Basis for Social Policy. If you haven't read it, folks, you need to read it. But
the TLDR of it is that if it makes me feel good, it doesn't matter how much it hurts the public.
Right. And it's an amazing book that I highly recommend. But I close down here by saying what I do not deny. Indeed, it is the summation of my political creed is the belief that liberals are always wrong about everything. Liberals are wrong about race in the same way that liberals are wrong about economics, foreign policy, education, you name it. whatever specific policy liberals may advance on race, as on any other issue, I will oppose with every fiber of my being. They've been wrong about everything forever, and I don't expect them to be right in the future.
About the only thing you can agree with most of the liberals on, at least through my lifetime, is it was okay to shoot Nazis. That's about it. They don't even want to contribute to the support of this podcast or our blogs. They have no respect for the yellow button.
They're bad people. You know, there's two kinds of people in the world, John. There are good people, and then there are stingy sons of bitches that don't hit the tip jar.
Yep.
You are a good person. Oh, Diana
is an excellent person.
She is a good person. But there are some bad people in the world, John. And
I'm willing to give them a second chance.
Yeah, we're going to give them a second chance because, folks, this is the portion of the show devoted to shameless capitalism. If you will go to my blog, theothermccain.com, you will notice in the top, near the top of the center column, a large yellow button with the word donate on it. If you will click the yellow button, it will take you to my PayPal account where you can contribute dollars, shekels, yen, rubles, euros, whatever you got, it'll take the money. Okay?
We'll even take RMB.
It may take Bitcoin for all I know. Donate, it'll take your Visa, your MasterCard, your American Express, it'll take anything, okay? So donate if you click the button, and that will help to support the blog, help support the podcast, and most important of all, keep my wife happy.
Meanwhile, over at Hogwash, there's this tip jar icon over in the sidebar. Click on that, go to my PayPal account, help support Hogwash. Or you can scroll down and do your shopping at the Hogwash store or at both our blogs. You'll find Amazon shopping links. As a matter of fact, we're going to get to one of them in just a minute that I'm going to mention as part of the next thing we're going to talk about after this. And those Amazon links that you find at the blogs that participate in the Amazon affiliate program, basically we get a small commission from your purchase. It's one of the things that Amazon does that's actually nice. So regardless of your point of view, if you'd really like to be a nice person, you need to remember the five most important words in the English language.
Hit the freaking tip jar.
Indeed. Thank you very much, Diana. Now, let's talk about election integrity. The Democrats and the mainstream media, I'm repeating myself, aren't I? The Democrats and the mainstream media have assured us that our election system is fair, it's secure, and it's unhackable.
Yeah, right.
So here's some items that went by in the news in the last few days. The Mariposa County elections folks have announced that they're going to replace the tabulating equipment that they had to turn over as part of the state Senate's audit of their election because it's been in the hands of third parties, i.e. the auditors, and therefore may be compromised. Apparently, they're afraid it was hacked. Here's another item. The New York City elections people have admitted that they accidentally counted 135 test ballots,
135,000
test ballots, and screwed up the count on their the recent primary. And here's an item. The California legislature has passed and Governor Herjel has signed into law a bill that changes the scheduling for the gubernatorial recall election to make it more difficult for people to campaign against him.
Yep. Big surprise there.
Yeah, well, that won't work. Everything is proceeding as I have foreseen, and I intend to chow down on a bunch of popcorn as I watch this go by. And by the way, folks, there's a link there in this in the blog post that I'm referring to called Election Integrity that was up this week. And you click on the link, and it'll take you off to do your Amazon shopping for Orville Redenbacher theater popcorn. It's great stuff. Oh, and by the way, on the 1st of July, we got a gift from the Supreme Court.
Yes.
They ruled that in Brnovich versus the Democratic National Committee that Arizona's voting laws about having to vote in your own precinct and that prohibited ballot harvesting don't violate the Voting Rights Act.
Yeah, and
which basically kind of guts the lawsuit that Merrick Garland just filed in Georgia.
Right. They're telling him that.
Can I interrupt really briefly? The same day, another really good decision came down, and that was the one that slapped Kamala Harris and Xavier Javier Becerra across the face for trying to demand, and the California legislature, for trying to demand that nonprofits give them the names of the donors.
Diana, we're having that synchronization problem again. Why don't you pop back out and pop back in? One more time, with feeling. So anyway, yeah, she was right. The other big story of the week was basically
you can't dox the donors, basically.
And the entire purpose of that California law and regulation was to find out who was donating to conservative organizations and to dox them. And quite frankly, the Supreme Court took note of that. If you read, I believe it's Justice Alito's decision, he basically says, no, you can't trust the Attorney General's office in California to keep things confidential.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, a very, very interesting sort of thing.
Yes.
We just have slightly serious as commented in the chat here that basically is consigning California Democrats to a warm location.
Yes. Well,
they're having a heat wave on the West
Coast. Other Democrats from other states there with them.
Could be. Anyway, that's
I'm not saying there won't be any Republicans in hell. I'm just saying all the Democrats.
Yeah, well, anyway, but you know, that was our betters really keeping us informed about how to do things with that. The other thing that was kind of off the wall this week was the cover of Vogue. There was a wonderful tweet from an account named Patty Girl that has a picture of the cover of Vogue and a sofa. And Patty Girl asked the question, who wore it better?
Yeah, it's a picture of Jill Biden in a dress that quite literally matches a sofa. Okay, she's wearing upholstery.
Well, actually, yeah. Anyway, it just coincidentally, the day before that, we were cleaning out some stuff and found another box that had a folder full of photographs. And in this case, it was one of the photographs was a picture that I made of my wife while we were still dating, and she hadn't even agreed to marry me yet. And I basically published that in the spirit of Rule 5 and said, I prefer the way Mrs. Hogue, while she was still Miss Potter, wore it. And it's she's not wearing exactly the same dress, but it is a black dress with flowers printed on it.
Yes, it's figured, as they say.
Yes. And of course, this is the girl I asked to marry me. And it was actually at the time I took the picture trying to get her to say yes. So, yeah. There's a there's a reason why I might like that. But anyway.
Anyways, meanwhile. Back-
but you'll notice the reason I was attracted to her is because I am a man and she is a woman. Was a woman. This is unfortunately for me, the late Mrs. Hoag. And there's a certain attraction between men and women. At least I think there's supposed to be based on my life experience. However, I'm not really a good bioethicist, am I?
Okay, so I had a post this week with the title, in quotes, Bioessentialist Concepts of Gender. And this is from a tweet by someone calling themselves Florence Ashley. Okay, let me read. I'm quoting her quote, her tweet here.
I think, is it her or his?
Well, right.
There.
There's a good question. There, yes.
Actually, I'm going to read my comment when you get through.
Gendering animals serves to normalize bioessentialist conceptions of gender. When we gender animals, we forget that sex is assigned, we begin to believe that sex is literally in the body.
Because it is. Sorry.
So says Florence Ashley, however. And when I saw this, I thought, that can't be real. No, did somebody actually accuse us of applying bioessentialist conceptions of gender to animals? What are you talking about? And it was screen capped at Ace of Spades. And I had to look this person up, and it is a real tweet by a real person. Well, a Canadian, anyways. I've never considered Canadians fully human, but let's not digress. And I post here on my blog, The Other McCain, you find it there, the full official autobiography of them, because Florence Ashley uses they, them pronouns. Florence Ashley is, and I'm reading from his, Florence Ashley is a trans feminist jurist and bioethicist based in Toronto, where they are a doctoral student at the University of Toronto Faculty of Law and Joint Center for Bioethics. It goes on to list Florence Ashley's various accomplishments, and all I could say is we're just going to let them go milk a bull or wait for a rooster to lay an egg.
Basically, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, the problem.
Go ahead. In some ways, it's worse. For one thing, from what I could gather, was the fondness for two and three question marks in each title is sort of terrifying. But also, I'm sorry, but if you get a kitten and you don't determine pretty darn quick whether it's male or female, you can find yourself fostering far, far, far too many kittens.
Well, as a matter of fact, when Mrs. Hoag and I were dating, she did pick up a stray cat, and it probably was about 3 hours pregnant when she picked the cat up. But she was a wonderful kitty, and we kept her for 21 years. But
how lovely!
But the litter, it was lots of friends to find to give cats to.
You know what? The one thing these people aren't doing,
thinking rationally,
they're not having families. Okay, the thing about the difference between male and female. If you've had both daughters and sons and you can't, I mean, the behavioral differences are stunning, okay? They just really are. And if you don't, in raising children, will certainly, we raised our daughter, you know, our oldest daughter, you know, she got her up to about 3 or 4 years old. And then the twin boys came along and it was like, holy cow. You know, I mean, it's just night and day. Mm-hmm. And people that think that the differences between boys and girls are imaginary or socially constructed just need to, you know, there's something wrong with those people.
Right.
Period.
Well, I mean, and you wonder how they were raised and how many of them were actually in single parent families and they don't know the difference between a husband and a wife.
Right. I think that the rise of gender theory, you know, this all came in the wake of the divorce revolution, mm-hmm. the single motherhood revolution. And
improperly raised boys that women don't want to have anything to do with as adults.
Right.
So, you know, where do you think the incels came from? But anyway, the whole thing is, by the way, it's there. They are they, they're them on the English side of Canada. But L, the feminine in French, because you don't have an alternative.
Yeah.
Anyway, here's my quote comment at the bottom of your post. I'm so old that I was taught that there were four genders for the English nouns: masculine, feminine, indefinite, and neuter, and that the indefinite and neuter have two forms in formal writing and speech. One's is the indefinite form, and you use he, him, his when you don't know the sex of the person. So basically the indefinite is the same as the masculine informally. And then most objects and a non-human animal, most objects are and most non-human animals can be referred to as it.
Mm-hmm.
It's.
They aren't usually. Indo-European languages tend to assign male to dogs when you don't know, and female to cats when you don't know.
But we speak English, and so a dog can be it. But if you know that the sex of the dog, it can be he or she. And graceful objects are generally referred to as if they were feminine. So we refer to a ship as she.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other commenters said the reason ships are referred to as she is because the amount of paint and powder it takes
it
to keep them up.
It costs so much to keep them in paint and powder. Every yep. naval person knows that one.
Well, a boat is a hole in the water surrounded by wood into which one pours money.
Yes.
That's just the way it is. So, you know, we have this wonderful person just keeping us, I'm sure, completely ethical with respect to our biology now.
Yeah.
But so apparently now we are misgendering animals.
Good God.
Yes.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know.
My cats.
It's crazy.
Well, I mean, on the other hand, you know, don't get milk from a bull.
Okay. Yeah. Someone put a nice little quote in there from an old ditty that I had never heard before. And I won't quote it as it's rather naughty. My obscenity quota has, I've already gone past it this week, screaming about these idiots.
Really?
Yeah. Meanwhile, crazy people are dangerous.
They certainly are. And you've got methamphetamine leaping off the pixels here.
Yes. Okay.
I did a post this week called Methamphetamine and White Supremacy. I begin by asking, what are your feelings about methamphetamine? What about fentanyl? Crack cocaine. What does the phrase drop the knife mean to you? The reason I ask these questions has to do with A, the guy who shot a cop in Daytona Beach, and B, a certain Instagram influencer. You see, after George Floyd's death last year produced riots in major cities, every bimbo with an Instagram account seemed to decide that she and her followers needed to have a conversation about white supremacy.
And I don't want to single out the one particular influencer whose post I happen to be looking at that triggered my reaction, because it doesn't really matter. They all did it. So never mind who it was that wrote that particular post about her need to reflect deeply on how she had benefited from white supremacy and what she needed to change to avoid inflicting harm in the future. It's irrelevant, because if you read one of them, you've read them all. And now, with school boards across the country erupting in debates over critical race theory, this insipid nonsense has become a national issue. White supremacy didn't kill George Floyd, he says in all capital letters. There is zero evidence, none whatsoever, that the cops who arrested George Floyd were motivated by racial bias. And despite the murder conviction of Derek Chauvin, it remains a fact that George Floyd had three times the lethal level of fentanyl in his system. Floyd refused to get in the back of the police car, claiming he couldn't breathe and was claustrophobic. So anyways, thank you. So you see the absurd non sequitur involved here. A black guy died, so every white person must publicly proclaim their complicity in his death. It never made sense to me, perhaps because I was taught that facts and logic matter. But I guess facts and logic are now racist. If an Instagram influencer who lives in the suburbs of Houston, Texas, can blame herself because a black man died in Minneapolis, what else is she to blame for, right? Okay, this powerful force of white supremacy makes people responsible for things that happen 1,200 miles away? Okay, so a guy dies of a fentanyl overdose, and this obligates a white woman in Texas who had never been to Minneapolis to castigate herself for having benefited from white supremacy. And I'm thinking, what about a methamphetamine overdose in Louisiana? This Instagram influencer didn't even notice the death of Trayford Pellerin, who died from methamphetamine and 11 bullets. But mainly, it was the bullets.
Well, but there was a certain amount of synergy with the meth.
Yeah. This guy.
And you got to be crazy to get yourself into that.
Right. Okay. And so, so what happened was, is that the cops in Lafayette, Louisiana, however they pronounce it down there.
It's
Lafayette in Georgia, but anyways, it's Lafayette, Louisiana. Okay, so the cops answered 911 calls that Trayford Pellerin, a guy with a lengthy criminal record, is in a convenience store causing trouble. Well, he walks out of the store brandishing a knife. The cops show up, and you see them, and you can see it on body cam. The cop following this guy down the street. He used the taser. The taser's ineffective. This guy just walking, crosses a major highway, goes up the side of it. The cops follow him, telling him, drop the knife. Then the rest of the cops show up, and there's this concentric circle, kind of semicircle, of five cops pointing the gun at him. And he goes to another convenience store, and they say, don't go in the store. And he proceeds to try to open the door, and they're thinking, he's going to take the clerk hostage, right? You know, he's waving a knife around, and they said, drop the knife. 17 times he was told to drop the knife, and he didn't drop the knife, and 11 bullets. Now, folks, how is it that white supremacy is to blame for you know, a guy getting wired out, his you know, he was just crazy on meth, and he was dangerous, and so What are you going to do?
Well, crazy people are dangerous, and sometimes policemen will have to shoot them.
and you don't need any critical race theory to understand that, but I do hear the boogie-woogie piano music in the background that tells me that we're nearing the end of the program.
Yes, we are.
And tomorrow's the 4th of July. Go out and celebrate America.
Yes, and you can look at my blog for the Astronomy Post of the Day. We'll have a picture of a globular cluster that is known as M80. I did that because there's no cherry bomb nebula. And be sure, really, stick with safe and sane legal fireworks. Please, no dynamite, TNT, or Tovex.
7 o'clock Saturday night. We'll be back. See you later.
See you later. Thanks for stopping by.
Good night.
Mr. Breeze.